The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday, good morning, Garrett.
Good morning. Here's where we are right now. All right, are you ready? Here's where we are. Mitch McConnell.
We'll hear the real issue is not these uncorroborated allegations of misconduct after all, but rather the fact that Judge Kavanaugh, now listen to this, drank beer in high school and in college.
So there you go. There's where you are. I've got to tell you, though, this is my favorite argument. I love now because the left is starting to make arguments that really aren't arguments. This came from National Review, a column in National Review where they're talking about Liz Swisher, one of Kavanaugh's former classmates who over the weekend went on CNN and was interviewed by Chris Cuomo and was asked the question, what do you know about Brett Kavanaugh that he was not truthful about in the hearing, Cuomo asked. Here's a quote. I would have stayed on the sidelines if he had said, I drank to excess in high school. I drank to excess in college. I did some stupid things, but I never sexually assaulted anyone. End of quote. And then she said, but to lie under oath, to lie about that, what else is true? And I say right here in National Review, but Swisher's comment about what she believes Kavanaugh ought to have said in order to be truthful lines up almost exactly with what Kavanaugh did say during his testimony.
Yeah.
Quote, I drank beer with my friends. Sometimes I had too many beers. Sometimes others did. I like beer. I still like beer. But I didn't drink beer to the point of blacking out, and I never sexually assaulted anybody.
Yes. Well, and he pointed out, you know, sometimes I went to sleep. Which, by the way, is what nearly 100% of people do after a night of drinking.
But it's just, you know, we said it yesterday, the story started falling apart for them because immediately after they got the FBI investigation, then boom, they started with all the, you know, everything else. And it was his drinking. What did those words really mean in his, yearbook? What did the slang really mean? And so, you know, at that particular point, they said, okay, we got to start moving the goalpost here now that the FBI started the investigation. You asked a good question during our pre-show meeting. You said, why did Trump say, expand it and talk to whoever you want?
You know, this is when the news came out and it got more reaction out of Democrats. Well, what's he up to? You wish you knew. But I think the president is looking at this going, okay, wait a minute. We're confident that there's nothing that's going to come out of this that's going to hurt Kavanaugh. So what is it that you have to do in order to provide a claim, in order to make a claim, as is the case? You saw Avenatti's client go on television and basically walk back her story. Well, I don't know that he spiked the punch. I saw him near the punch bowl, but I don't know what he did. Did you see him lined up outside doors?
No.
Well, I saw him congregating with other boys in the hallways.
Yeah, but you know something? This is a story that nobody would run with if it wasn't a Trump nominee.
Exactly.
Nobody would run with the story.
Exactly.
Nobody, that's why I call it fake investigative news.
Right. And so while she's not a part of it, which is why, you know, the media wanted to have her on, we need her to tell her story in the public. You know, much like a hearing, except for we're not going to do it formally. This is going to be, you know, we'll control the narrative, except she couldn't control her own narrative. Her story's changed now. And by the way, weren't we told by Avenatti that was a sworn statement? Now, I have no idea who would pursue anything, if there is anything they could pursue for her given a sworn statement. But we were given by Avenatti, the media was given a document that had her making statements as fact. And then she walks it back. But I think this is what the president was getting at. You know, so many things have changed in this entire thing. You can look at the claims, and depending on what is said to the FBI in these interviews, you could be looking at perjury. For Dr. Ford, and I think this is what her attorneys are worried about. I think it's why they were so anxious over the weekend. Remember, they said over the weekend, we've contacted the FBI trying to set up the interview. And as of Sunday, they were saying, you know, no interview yet. They haven't talked to her. Well, why would you want to do it so soon after testimony? Because you want to keep her on track. You don't want her changing her story. Now, the FBI is not going to do anything against her. And I don't know that there would be any action against her, except for the fact that she was under oath last Thursday. So whatever she said then, her comments to the FBI are part of the process in vetting Kavanaugh. And if they differ from her testimony, there will be questions. And so the left is coming out, and this is why I think they're also going for perjury for Kavanaugh. They keep making up these bogus perjury things that aren't going anywhere. And all of them have to do with the amount of alcohol that he's drinking. And he was never very, had he said, well, listen, I was very clear to only have four ounces of, remember Richie Cunningham and telling his dad? Okay, for those under the age of 70, Richie Cunningham was a character in a show called Happy Days. Yeah, yeah.
Well, but it was on all through the 80s all the time.
It was. So. And now Richie Cunningham is a liberal director.
But his brother?
Yes.
Is a conservative.
That's right. And so he, Ron Howard, who, anyway, so his dad asked him, well, he goes, Dad, I just had, you know, these tiny little drinks. Well, how many did you have? 72. I love that episode. It was great. I'll never forget, looking at Richie's face, because he actually, Ron Howard looked drunk. I thought, man, that's good acting. But if Kavanaugh had come out and made certain claims, I was clear to only have one drink at any function. He didn't say that. In fact, at the time in my mind when I was watching it, I was almost critical of him. And I thought, no, actually, this is exactly how judges are. They're very forthcoming, especially about anything that they have done in their past to this extent. This is not criminal behavior to the effect.
Yeah, throwing the ice was.
Exactly, throwing the ice at a bar. According to one police report.
He might have thrown ice.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And he never says he threw ice. But in the police report, someone claims they threw ice and a guy's ear was bleeding. Look, people's ears bleed all the time.
Yeah, but the ears bleeding wasn't from the ice. That was from the other person throwing the beer.
Exactly.
Look, I'm paying attention to this because, damn it, I need to know what he did.
No, all that matters is that it was listed as an assault and somebody was bleeding. See, you got to think like a liberal.
Okay, that's it.
So this is the insanity.
By the way, you know why I'm laughing?
Huh.
I was a club DJ for years.
Yeah.
I saw massive bar fights in my time.
Look, and all the oil field workers, and they're probably asleep right now, but out in West Texas are screaming, the guy got to leave the bar with his ear intact? Oh. Well, we call that a good day. So here's the thing. that actually comes from a real scenario. But the entire equation has to be distorted, and there has to be this distraction, right? And now it's about what did he know, when did he know it, about the claims, right? Because the text messages now show, well, that he knew about the Ramirez claim ahead of time before it got to the media. Well, okay. Here's the concern, I think, for the Democrats. Is that the president has essentially directed the FBI to talk to anybody and everybody who might be relevant to this situation. Well, that includes people who were supposed to have corroborated. If they've got the FBI agent sitting in front of them, they're going to be nervous. They're going to, and I wonder how the story is going to change. And again, if it does, I wonder where this thing goes.
Just as you're talking about this, just as we're talking about this, this comes across.
Okay.
From our news feed from Westwood One.
Okay.
Our company.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah. Westwood One News. Eric Swalwell, the U.S. representative from California. He's been on with Tucker Carlson before. This guy's a piece of work.
Yeah.
And it just comes across as you're talking there. Just, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it just came across. And it says Swalwell, Senate, Kavanaugh, lies are disqualifying. And I went, well, what are the lies about?
Right.
Apparently, I've not listened to this audio cut, but I'm going to play it here.
Okay.
But it says a former college classmate of Brett Kavanaugh says the Supreme Court nominee was not truthful about his drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. All right, let's play this.
Typically, this would not be disqualifying for any Supreme Court nominee, the fact that they drank in college like most people in college do. However, it is disqualifying because he has painted himself as a choir boy who never engaged in any of this behavior.
Wrong.
And
See? Wrong.
He lied.
Wrong.
There's Eric
That's
Swalwell
a lie.
Lying.
That's a lie.
That's the whole point.
And if lying disqualifies you from the Supreme Court, then you need to step down from office.
we'll say it again. CNN did the interview over the weekend with one of Kavanaugh's former classmates. I would have stayed on the sideline if he had said, I drank to excess in high school, I drank to excess in college, I did some stupid things, but never sexually assaulted anybody. His actual comments, I drank beer with my friends. Sometimes I had too many beers. Sometimes other did. I like beer. I still like beer, but I didn't drink beer to the point of blacking out, and I never sexually assaulted anyone. Where's the perjury?
And that's it. The left is scrambling so hard right now. Frankly,
I can't believe this.
Thank you, God, for giving me that
Eric Swalwell.
Well, and this entire thing is a gift to the Republicans. If you're a Democrat right now, you should be worried about this behavior right now by your party. This should concern you greatly. Because here's the difference. The blue wave may happen in the House. Nancy Pelosi, I'm going to be Speaker again. Don't grab the keys just yet, Nancy, even if you do win. In the Senate, you and I, you were going over some polls. Some recent polls, some that had Thursday included, but not just Thursday. And that's important because of the hearing. But if you look at these polls in the Senate, they're very close right now. And if you get a couple of other seats, a couple of more seats for the Republicans in the Senate, they can afford to lose a Collins on the next Supreme Court nominee.
Well, I mean, we were looking at the New Jersey Senate, Huggin versus Menendez, Robert Menendez, the incumbent, the Democrat incumbent.
Right.
And it says, if you look at the Real Clear Politics, Menendez is up by four. Well, the Quinnipiac poll in August with registered voters had him up by six. The Stockton University poll that goes to the 27th till last Thursday of likely voters, that's more accurate, has Menendez only up by two.
Yeah.
And that's a margin of error of 4.3.
Wow. Again, this is not over. And if you're a Democrat, you should be absolutely worried about this, because I've never in my lifetime, in my adult lifetime, I don't remember the Republicans being this gelled and motivated.
Kramer over Heitkamp. Just out from the 17th, NBC Valley News, from the 17th to the 27th. This just came out, all right? 650 likely voters. He breaks the 51%. He's up 51 to 41 over Heidi Heitkamp.
Yeah.
Now, that goes to the 27th. Donnelly in Indiana, the Fox News poll, but that goes to the – that's the latest one just till the 11th of September. But still – his Republican opposition, Braun, is up by two. Now, that was before any of this, you know, because the 11th, that was really before we got into any of this. Mm-hmm. And so I just wonder really what the polls are going to say that are going to be coming out the latter part of this week. And the polls are going to be coming out now much more frequently as we get closer to the election. We got a great show ahead. So much to talk about. We'll get your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up on the show, the polls on Kavanaugh, some interesting polls. You know, you and I talked about the ignorance of the American public.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, nobody listening to our show. That's why you're listening to our show.
Mm-hmm.
But the ignorance of the American public shows up in the Kavanaugh polls. Yeah. When you tell people, well, you know that the witnesses that they even claim, you know, for example, Ford, the witnesses that she claims, all say, we don't know what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. It changes completely what people think, which means a significant portion of people have no idea that the witnesses that she has used have not corroborated what she has said.
Right.
As soon as they do, I think it's up to, you know, 57% of people believe that he should be confirmed.
Right.
That means roughly 40, you know, because I'm sure there's a few people that go, I don't know. So that means somewhere between 35 and 40% don't believe he should be confirmed. And, of course, that's roughly the number of Democrats that
right.
exist.
Yeah.
So, as we have always said, in any of these, in anything that we talk about, people go, well, you're never going to convince everybody. That's not the point.
No.
Your point is not to convince everybody. Your point is to convince the majority of those independents and those people that are in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you roughly have 40% of America that's Republican and 40% that's Democrat, it's the other 20%. Does that run add up to 100? Those are the people that you are trying to move in a particular direction. And so when you have 57%, that means you have convinced enough to get to where you wish to get
mm-hmm.
once the information is out there to the people. So that's really important. Government debt increased for fiscal 2018 by $1.2 trillion.
Yep.
The polls on the Senate races, it might affect the Kavanaugh vote. Will McConnell hold a vote this weekend? New study, there's a link between violent video games and physical aggression.
Hmm.
I hope not Judas Priest, though. Boy, that takes me back to the late 80s. The NBC fake investigative news report from yesterday will tell you about the LGBTQ organizations that join up together to fight for gun rights. The G now stands for guns.
Yes.
We'll tell you about the college professor that says white Republicans should be castrated.
Whoa. What? I'm sorry, what?
White Republican men. Okay. Just
wait, need what?
Yeah, white Republican men need to be castrated. I don't know.
Gary McNamara, Eric Harley.
I think that may be going a little overboard.
Yeah. I want to take some time to look into this. if the president could have the FBI look into this, just question all of the white males and see. And get it done within a week.
By the way, didn't Democrats used to love the FBI?
Yeah. Yeah. Remember when you were criticizing the FBI, you were undermining the integrity of our republic? Thank you, Molly Hemingway, for a really great tweet on Monday. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Continued rains from what was Hurricane Rosa will affect Southern California, portions of southwestern Arizona, and the Central Rockies through at least tomorrow. As much as 3 to 6 inches, isolated amounts of 10 inches of rain for areas right up through the Central Rockies. You can expect some heavy rain again today along areas of I-10 in Arizona, sections of I-40 south of the Grand Canyon, and I-15 as you head from California through Vegas into Utah. The severe weather and heavy showers yesterday in the upper Midwest is moving off to the east. We saw those heavy showers in Iowa, portions of Wisconsin, northern Illinois, and Michigan. Today, that system slowly moves to the north and east. We'll see rain for I-81 all the way over to I-75, and then on I-80 east and west, we'll see those showers rather heavy today. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. And also the new trade deal, the good and the bad, all coming up.
Their fingers. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary, he's Eric, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, you asked a great question during our bottom of the hour, and that was, is anything going to take the Democrats off the brink?
I don't know of anything right now that brings them back from the brink in our lifetime, because this is what happened last Friday when Jeff Flake is confronted in the elevator. And then those who confront him later that day say, this is why we go direct. What it did was to justify and attempt to legitimize the shouting of a Ted Cruz out of a restaurant, even though that same restaurant has now hired security guards. It is, they see it as, well, it worked. And this is why we're going direct. This is why we will keep doing this, because they believe, again, they're going to get the same reaction that they got out of Jeff Flake. Well, newsflash, he admitted in the 60 Minutes interview, if he were up for reelection, that would have never happened. You never would have gotten him together with Coons. That agreement to delay this thing and have an FBI background check this week would never have happened. He admitted it. He doesn't care what the people of Arizona think. He doesn't care what the people think. He only cares what the people think if it serves him.
Him.
And so this entire equation is the what they see as the momentum. Now, here's the problem the party has. And by the way, to the party, we need to repeat, these people don't care about you either. They don't. They don't care that Jeff Flake had disdain as a Republican for Donald Trump. After he got with Coons and they came up with this agreement to do this FBI background check, they started screaming, it's not enough. And so they don't care about anybody in the party. But the future of the party is certainly in question when this kind of behavior drives it and paints a picture for the rest of America. And as you mentioned, Gary, earlier, that 20% in the middle that look at this and say, and all of the people watching that NBC interview with Swetnick, where she's walking it back, NBC had to state that they couldn't corroborate her
claims. Then there's no story.
The New York Times, of course, did that last week and said, nope, we can't. We talked to and interviewed several dozen people and couldn't find one with firsthand knowledge of this event. And she, Swetnick, had to walk it back and say, he was near the punch bowl. I don't actually know if he was putting drugs in, and I don't know if he was putting drugs in the punch. And he was hanging out with people in the hallway. I don't know if he was actually lined up, but it seems like, she said, it seems like that's a strange coincidence. No, it's not. Actually, it's not. You could have people at a party that would never condone that kind of behavior and still not know that it's going on behind closed doors.
The fact that they ran with the story to begin with shows you where journalism, I mean, that's absolutely
trash. Yes. No, you're
trash.
Absolutely right.
That's trash journalism. Any journalists listening right now, and, you know, we're on hundreds of stations across America, including all the major ones in D.C. and New York, WMAL, WABC, where all the media, you know, where they are located. And we know a ton of you listen, and you all know what NBC did was a complete hack job. That isn't journalism. An allegation in itself without anything else to corroborate it is not a story. It's not a story that a major newspaper or a major television network should ever run. It lacks completely on any type of journalism ethics, and they know it.
Had that been someone claiming that about Obama in 2008, that it never would have seen the light of day.
Well, you know what's coming out now is the leaks of the completely anonymous.
Yeah, right.
There was another one, completely anonymous. Mm-hmm. People are just sending letters. Hey, mm-hmm. I was abused.
Right.
And then that's being leaked. Oh, there's another letter in from somebody else. Wait, have you paid attention to social media?
You can make, these people don't even use their real name on social media,
right,
most often.
Right. I mean, it's just, and it's, to me, it shows you, you know, that NBC, don't ever complain about President Trump using the term fake news and directing it at you.
Right.
If you put out that kind of piece of trash story based on an allegation and you do an interview knowing going in that this person is walking back everything that they say and you can't find anybody to corroborate it, you don't go with that story. It's the same thing. As I mentioned from we talked about yesterday from Eric Brady at USA Today when he wrote,
well, should Brett Kavanaugh be coaching girls' teams? Not until the investigation is done. And then talked about in his original article, a credible source. By the way, just a note, as I had said on yesterday's show, I know Eric Brady, knew him as a kid. He was really good friends with my neighbor across the street, just so people know.
Right.
It's important. See, that's what you do in Jersey. You let people know that because somebody might find out. And as I said last night, I said, you know, since I knew him when he was young, and, you know, we've kept in touch over the years just on Facebook, which is his Facebook now is deleted. But that was a piece of trash article that he wrote and said, you know, claimed it as a news story, not an opinion, that credible evidence. And it was, there's no credible evidence against Kavanaugh. And that's why when you said that during the break, it hit home with me. They're never going to get off the brink here.
No, ever. This it won't end when Trump is no longer president. This is not going to end.
No.
Because, in fact, they'll feel more empowered. Trump is the one who calls them out. The next guy or gal likely won't. And here's what's interesting, too. So NBC goes with the interview from Swetnick. They admit they can't find anything to back it up, anybody else to back it up. They go with the interview. An interview. The story on the Mitchell memo, this is the prosecutor brought in to do the questioning at the hearing. And the memo was released. And on Monday, NBC News decided that wasn't worth reporting. Now, if Mitchell had reported that my finding is that Judge Kavanaugh is not worthy of being seated on the highest court, that would have been the lead headline. In fact, it would have been an NBC News special.
Right.
Now, if you're wondering, NBC News, why nightly news is at an all-time low, that's it. Nobody believes you, and they see right through you. You're hacks. Nothing more, nothing less. And it's shameful behavior.
Yeah, so stop feeling insulted when Trump says you're fake news.
Right. You're not even worthy of his recognition, frankly, because you're nothing. If you're going to put somebody up there, you admit you can't back up independently as a news organization anything the woman is about to say. You put her on. The memo, which is part of the official process from the prosecutor, gets zero time.
Yes, we don't feel that the president should stoop to your level.
Right.
That'll really tick them off.
Well, that's by the way, coming from a guy who has, how many times have we said on this program, there are times when somebody needs to just take his Twitter account away for a few minutes, and there are times when he doesn't speak effectively or he says something that totally doesn't work. The communications from this White House have been horrible, but that's how bad it is at NBC.
But it's also
you don't. You haven't earned the right for him to come
at
you.
It's also what you get from the left that, well, because of this president's in there, we're changing the way that we do things.
Yeah.
We haven't.
No.
We haven't changed. We don't care who's
effective communication.
We never change our standards of what we will do, whether it's Obama, whether it's Bush, whether it's Clinton. Well, we weren't working together with Clinton. Whether it's Trump. We don't care.
No.
There are certain, and if the two idiots overnight can do it, NBC, you certainly have the ability to do it. You don't want to do it.
No, they go out of their way to put somebody on, do an actual interview with somebody, and that they themselves as a news organization can't back up and one word she's saying, but ignore part of the official process. And that statement was part, the Mitchell release, the memo was part of the official process. They could take it and take it to another prosecutor and ask that prosecutor, well, what did you think? Did you watch it? What did you think of Kavanaugh's and Dr. Ford's claims? And would you say the same thing the memo did? Not even that. They completely skirted the entire thing.
And then you're going to have all these guys and gals chomping on cigars in the boardroom at NBC News trying to think, what's going wrong? Why are our ratings going down? What's the problem here?
Well, it's interesting because one of the other stories that came out during the day on Monday is that you have the founder of CNN, Ted Turner, that says CNN has become too political. This coming from a guy who's clearly on the left and is the founder of the network. And then you have the former showrunner, really, at Greenfield, Jeff Greenfield, who ran CNN for years, comes out and says, the people that work at CNN think that they're part of or act as if they're the quote, they count themselves as part of the anti-Trump resistance. But we know this. We see it. It's very obvious. But when you have other people that were, you know, there before that can look at it and say, this is clear what's going on. These people are activists. They're not journalists. They, instead of opinion, they're not even, they won't even be, they like cowards, hide behind the word analysis. That's the new word for opinion. Write opinion at the top.
Yeah, but opinion should be based on something.
Well, see,
that's why you're a hack.
And analysis should be, here's the situation. But it's not. It's, here's my opinion. So if you're going to have an opinion piece, call it opinion. But you know what? The cat's already out of the bag. People see right through these news organizations. It's not tolerated anymore, and you wonder why they're not trusted, and you wonder why those CNN shows are at the bottom of the cable news and NBC is at the bottom of the network news.
It's not Trump. It's you.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to KC in Warren, Michigan. KC, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio as we talk about where the FBI investigation is going, the whole Kavanaugh thing. Hi. Welcome.
Hey, good day, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Good, yeah. Did you just say that Ted Turner said CNN was too political?
Yeah. That's how bad it's gotten, KC. Yes.
A guy who made Jane Fonda.
Yes.
Too political.
Yes.
If that's the bar, guys, I don't know. It's like, and you were talking about castration day. That's a good Buddha for all us guys to self-identify as a woman, I think.
Oh. See? Yeah. No, yeah. KC is thinking. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And if NBC was doing such a fictitious story, when'd they have Brian Williams do the interview?
Okay. KC is guys, on point.
Guys, I want to talk about Diane Kreinstein.
Yes.
But first, I do have a question for you.
Yes.
What number keeps going up and nobody cares?
The debt.
1 million.
The debt, 1.2 trillion.
Yep. Yep.
No. No.
Nope.
It's Gary's golf game.
Actually, I haven't played in a while. My sciatic nerves bother me. It's actually going down.
I would venture to say, KC, and thank you for the call, that most people, or more people, care about Gary's golf game than they do the national debt.
Yeah, that's where you're wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, you probably find more people.
Until I had to hang up the clubs about 2.5 weeks ago because of the sciatic nerve. But it's doing really good. I expect in the next 2 weeks to pick them up again. Got a tournament in November.
Well, Tiger's making a comeback.
No, you can too. No, the score's actually going down. I'm playing better golf.
Good, good.
See? I'm going to spend, I spent 20 seconds on that. Let's spend less time. The national debt up $1.2
trillion. Yeah, now it's up to $21.5
Okay, that's it.
So there we go.
That's it.
Nobody cares.
Don't give us money. Nobody cares about
nobody
that.
Nobody cares.
They care more about my golf game.
Yes. That's, by the way, something else that's not going to come back from the brink, along with the left, the national debt.
Oh, I thought you meant my golf game.
Still, the jury's out on that one. We're doing an FBI background check on that one.
Yeah, and that story came out yesterday. Not even a blip. What are we up to? $21.5 billion.
Yep, trillion.
Trillion, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
I wish it were billion.
Well, if it was billion, there'd be no problem.
Well, we could just go to fine. You know, a couple of liberals like Warren Buffett and Mr. Microsoft, Bill Gates, and say, hey, come
on.
You
guys pay it off.
You guys paid this off for us. We want to get back to work.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right, so looking at some of the new polls out there, okay?
Right.
The Harvard Caps Harris Survey. This is from thedailywire.com.
All right.
The Harvard Caps Harris Survey found that when people are told that the three named witnesses do not corroborate the accusations of Christine Blasey Ford, opinions shift decisively in Kavanaugh's favor. They reported on Monday, polls by YouGov and Reuters found that people largely believe what benefits their affiliated party. More than two-thirds of Democrats believe the sexual allegations against Kavanaugh, while roughly the same percentage of Republicans do not. Overall, YouGov found that 41% believe Ford, 35% believe Kavanaugh. Reuters found 42% believe Ford, 31% believe Kavanaugh. Harris Poll Chairman Mark Penn, a former Bill Clinton pollster, reported Sunday that the Harris Poll found that 40% who saw or read parts of the testimonies last Thursday felt that Ford alone seemed credible, while 23% alone said Kavanaugh seemed credible alone. A total of 27% said that both seemed believable. Thus, 67% total felt that Ford was credible. 50% felt that Kavanaugh was credible. Where the Harris Poll study gets really interesting is in its findings on the impact of the FBI investigation and the issue of cooperation. The credibility of their testimony does not appear to be a decisive factor, writes Penn. Rather, the question comes down to cooperation as the standard for tipping public opinion on whether Kavanaugh should ascend to the high court. When respondents were told that the three named witnesses do not corroborate Forbes' claims, 57% said they are in favor of his confirmation. If the FBI finds no cooperation for Ford's claims, 60% say Kavanaugh should be confirmed, Penn reports. Well, I've seen this on social media. I can't tell you how many polls I've seen. Do you believe Ford or do you believe Kavanaugh? Or was Kavanaugh credible? Or what? That's not a question. Eric, you said a long time ago, if the premise is wrong, everything after that is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise of the question is wrong.
Yes.
It's not whether did her testimony alone seem credible. That's not a question I care about. Does her testimony in regards to the evidence that exists,
the facts
that exist, the evidence that is out there, does she come across as credible?
Because that's what really this testimony is all about. Are is the facts. The entire testimony, what her claims are, have to be backed by something. Those facts have to tell the story, or those corroborations have to tell her story, and nobody's, even the witnesses she claims could back it up, can't back it up. So that's what it comes down to. Any investigation, and this is an investigation, not a criminal investigation, but it is an investigation, goes to finding the facts. And do the facts hold up? Does the story, as she tells it, does it hold up?
Penn said in his a polling that concluded that independents are the ones that are most open to changing their view, mm-hmm. based on the FBI findings. And as we've said all along, because we get this all the time when we talk about, look, if you get out there and you have a consistent message, and it's a good message, you will convince the independents. And that's what we've always stated, and we've always received the response has been, you can't convince everybody. We're not attempting to convince everybody. Mm. That's a wrong premise. You're not attempting to convince everyone. The poll found that even if the FBI comes out and finds no corroboration, 60% of Democrats still don't want him confirmed.
Right.
Well, duh. He could be Mother Teresa alive, and they would still not want him to be confirmed. The point is the evidence there to make her testimony credible? And it absolutely is not. And that's the message that you need to get about, you know, you need to get across. And there needs to be a consistent message there. You know, you go to social media and the questions that are being asked are just bizarre. And if you look at the media, and that's why we started off the show with this. And when you look at what, for example, the person who went to Yale with Kavanaugh, the classmate, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and, you know, and she came across and said, if he only had said this, and then you look at his testimony, well, he did say that. They're actually to the point now where the liberals, this is how bad it's, you're asking, will they ever get off the brink? Well, we're to the point where they're making an accusation, he's lying. Really? Yes, he should have said this. Well, he did. See? He's lying. No, but you said if he said this, he wouldn't be lying. No, but he's lying. But he said this. I mean, that's where we are right
and
now.
And the media carries it.
And the exactly.
The media gives it life. Because here's the difference. If you look at the case of the New York Times, talking about the accusations made in the New Yorker piece, this is what they wanted to do. They wanted to do their tactic on this story, this claim, was to go find and interview as many people as possible to see if they had firsthand knowledge of this happening. They couldn't find one. NBC goes out and says, well, we couldn't find anybody to back it up, but we're going to put her on anyway. The Yale classmate actually makes a statement that parallels what Kavanaugh said and said, if he had said this, then I wouldn't have a problem. But still, the media carries the story. Because what you're looking to do is, if I were writing that story, if it were my work to put that story into print or put it on TV or anywhere else, it would be my approach to say, this is going to be torn to shreds because what she said, and I need to go back over, this is what I would do. I would get the transcript, and I would read it and read it again because she's claiming, the classmate is claiming he didn't say something when he did. It's an all-out lie, but if you're in the media and you're taking that story to print, to TV, to whatever, you're part of the lie. Because it took another media organization to tear it down and say, well, actually, he did say that.
Does it ever feel like that, and this does not come from arrogance whatsoever, because you know that we refer to ourselves as the two idiots overnight, but does anyone ever get the feeling, and this just doesn't include just you and me, Eric, but everybody listening right there, does it ever get to the point where you just think to yourself, dealing
with the Democrats right now, the mainstream Democrats, is like dealing with our children.
Yes.
And the excuses the children will give.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that out of meanness. I'm talking about the arguments that they are making. You know, you and I said this last week. Said the American people, when you basically, they understand due process. And if you talk about the due process and what the Democrats are doing here, and not, you know, the belief in, you know, that you're innocent until, you know, proven guilty. The fact of what they used to claim they cared about. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what the liberals used to care about. And the fact they don't. I said, but if you keep pushing it, the majority of Americans do believe in that. Even Democrats that say they won't vote for Kavanaugh, they still view this as a cheap shot against him.
Yes.
They view it as a, if yes. if you get them alone and you ask them, they'll tell you that. Oh, by the way, one of the people that I know on social media that doesn't talk much, used to talk more as a liberal and has been quiet over the last year, came out in favor of Kavanaugh.
Wow.
And did it in a very subtle way. And I was like, ooh, wow. But if you actually talk to Democrats right now, they're not happy with the way that this is actually going. They won't come out publicly and criticize their party for what they're doing, but they feel very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They understand mm-hmm. there's no evidence here. Mm-hmm. They understand, and then they see this just rolling. And that's the whole point, that many Republicans look at this and go, wow, are you kidding me? They're going down this path, and now they're just taking anonymous sources and throwing it out. I mean, this is just so slimy and so dirty. Against Kavanaugh, because there is no corroborating evidence. There is no evidence. And look, people aren't stupid. They will sit there and say, this really stinks.
Well, and that's it, because it does.
They'll look at the Ford and say, all these GoFundMe accounts, now they're now have, what, $1 million or over $1 million? What in the world's going on here? The lawyers were pro bono. You're talking about an airplane flight.
Right.
Why is all this money being right? It looks dirty.
Yes.
It all looks dirty in the American public. And that's why when you bring it up about the cooperation and when people actually look into it, and you said it earlier to me off the air, you said this is really like the experience that we have with Kaepernick. That
yes.
people have no
right.
idea that Kaepernick, it's about free speech. Why aren't you watching? Well, look, I'm not angry. It's just I don't prefer to watch it because of, and you explain what he actually did, and you explain the pig socks. Every single person that supported Kaepernick had no, that I have talked to, and it's in the hundreds over the last year,
mm-hmm.
had no idea about the cop pig socks.
Right.
Once you bring that up, they go, it's a good point. Mm-hmm. They had no idea about Michael Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
No idea that Michael Bennett, who was the catalyst, one of the catalysts last year, and has become one of the leaders of the movement, who was also, you know, in the locker room yesterday for Philly,
mm-hmm.
got famous and became the poster person last year
mm-hmm.
to continue it because he lied about the Las Vegas police. Every single person that was supporting Kaepernick didn't know about that either. And they went, oh, okay, yeah, that is bad. And I'll leave it at that. I won't judge them, but you can tell they know. When you bring up things that are common sense to people, when you bring up something like fairness and the preponderance of evidence before finding somebody guilty, that it has to exist somewhere, there's a reason that NBC wouldn't run Mitchell's report. Why wouldn't they run it? Because they know that even their few listeners, their dozen listeners or viewers that are left, even if they're liberal, would say,
yeah,
not good.
Right.
And why do you do that to adults? Why don't you want adults to know the truth?
Right.
We don't hide anything in the show. There's nothing I would hide. Any news item, I could care less. I'll bring up anything that's going on out there. Why won't they?
Right.
Why will they hide things that are important to a story? And even if they disagree with it, analyze it.
Right.
But they, as we talked about before, we talked last week about lying through omission
mm-hmm.
in a lot of stories out there now.
Right,
there'll
sure.
be a lie through omission. We just won't include parts of it.
And while they'll give an interview to somebody who's making claims that they as a news organization couldn't even corroborate,
right.
they will ignore a key piece to the actual, an official piece of the actual procedure. the actual process in place. They ignore it completely.
But when you give Americans, when you start telling Americans, well, look, here's what's going on with this case, and you lay it out to them, that's why all of a sudden you go to, you know, 60% say, oh, or 57% say, oh, we didn't know. Okay, yeah, that's wrong if there's no corroboration. Well, and if the FBI finds out there's no one, 60% of Americans believe it, that's almost all of independence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what you're looking for. That's what you're looking for in any election. And we always get this, and we've talked about the administration and said, look, you can have more successes if you have a consistent, solid message day in and day out because, well, you'll never convince the liberals. That's not your goal.
That's not your goal. And you know, it's like Jeff Flake saying, you know, saying when I went to Coons, I was telling him this is tearing our country apart. We have to do something. Well, who's responsible for the damage?
Right. You're going to the person that's tearing the country apart.
Yes.
And telling him you have to stop.
And telling him you're coming over to his side to support his position.
Right.
And then Coons calls, you know, Jeff Flake the hero. Really? Who's tearing the country apart? Who was engaged in this kind of behavior outside of Kavanaugh, outside of Trump even? It's the left. Who's shaming people out of restaurants?
It's the left.
Even people that work at those restaurants, shaming people out of restaurants. That behavior is tolerated by the left. It's not the right doing that. That's the left. So if anyone sees us as divided and harshly divided, ask yourself who's engaged in that kind of behavior.
If you want to get in, we have a line open. We'd love to hear from you. Get in now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
When it comes to proper tire care and maintenance, what can you do to improve fuel economy? Jason Evans is Director of Store Operations for GCR Tires and Service, and he tells us.
Fuel economy is certainly something on the top of everybody's mind. So I think the industry in general understands, beginning to understand the importance of things like air pressure. But just to throw an idea out there that maybe not all our listeners hear all the time, is check your tread depths. Check your tread depths, particularly on dual wheel positions, where tires are bolted together and essentially forced to rotate down the road at the same speed, because for $2 in your local truck stop, you can find a tread depth gauge. Anything beyond 1/8 of an inch difference, or commonly referred to as 4/32 in the tire industry, between dual positions can really add to rolling resistance. Not only does it add to rolling resistance, it tears up your tires faster, and in a lot of cases, it's a similar condition in terms of a fuel economy as having maybe a brake dragging. That may be a tidbit out there for the listeners to really key in on, because mismatched tread depths on duals can really add to rolling resistance.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour is sponsored by Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So we'll see what happens. I was reading the political article about Mitch McConnell saying, hey, we'd like to have a vote this weekend. And I'm thinking, really? They're saying, well, if the FBI investigation is finished by Wednesday, and I've been hearing this, even though not officially, different articles stating that, yeah, the FBI could get this wrapped up. We even heard Tuesday.
Right.
I heard that, Sunday or Monday? I forgot when I heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I hear Wednesday it can be, wrapped up, even though the president has said, you know, you can expand it. But how far do you expand it? What does that mean, expanding it? Expand it to what?
Well,
what allegations?
It would be expanding it to, in fact, the coverage that I read was expanding it to essentially anybody that might be connected with these allegations, which is the any other claimed witness along the way. And if you expand it to that, well, you may or may not get cooperation from that person. This is not a criminal investigation. So they can call you or, you know, ask you show up at your door and ask you if you would mind talking to them about this. But that person doesn't necessarily have to do that legally. They don't have to talk to them. Because they're not, this is, again, not a criminal investigation. And that person is not the target if it were.
And there are some people that don't want to be dragged into it.
You're right. They don't want to, because they know their name is going to be, you know, all through the media. And that's happened. This is why we thought it was interesting that Kavanaugh pointed out the many women that supported him, because he said basically his point was they knew full well that they were going to be in the public eye for supporting me. And we see all the craziness surrounding this.
Right, that their privacy now is going to be invaded.
Yep.
And he was thanking them for coming forward. Right.
Yeah. So there are plenty of people here the FBI may call on that may not want to answer the door.
Listen to Red Eye Radio on your Amazon Echo every day, anytime. Say, Alexa, enable the Red Eye Radio skill. Then, anytime you want to listen, say, Alexa, open Red Eye Radio.
And welcome. Good morning. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Drivers, if you're looking maybe to go into business for yourself, Agile Financial can help you. They've got an A-plus rating with a Better Business Bureau. They're ready to talk to you about making more money per mile, starting your own company, all the great things you want to do. They can help you do it. Even if you've got ugly credit, they can walk you through the process and help you get into that truck, trailer, or maybe even a small fleet. How about that? Agile Financial. They're a great company. You can go to agiletruck.com. Agiletruck.com. Give them a call. Great time. And I've talked to a number of owner-operators over this last year. A great time to be an owner-operator. So if you've been thinking about it, well, do it. And at least make the call. Call Agile Financial. In fact, their phone number, 409-995-0721. 409-995-0721. Or go to agiletruck.com.
Mark Judge, a high school friend of Brett Kavanaugh, accused of witnessing the alleged sexual assault of Christine Ford, is being interviewed by the FBI. Judge's lawyer said on Monday, Judge's interview started, but it has not been completed. His attorney said in a statement on Friday, Mark Judge said he would cooperate with any law enforcement investigation that will confidentially probe the allegations, which he has categorically denied. When Ford testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Capitol Hill last week, she claimed Judge was in the same room as Kavanaugh when he allegedly pinned her down while at a high school party 36 years ago. She said the judge jumped on top of them, jumped on top of the bed as it happened. In a letter to the committee after the hearing, Judge said, "I do not call the events described by Dr. Ford in her testimony before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee today. I never saw Brett act in the manner that Dr. Ford described." So there you go. I didn't hear anything yesterday from Ford's people. Were they out yesterday saying that she wasn't interviewed yet?
I did not see anything to that effect, but there's no doubt, obviously, before this is over, that she will be interviewed.
Let's go to Benjamin in Phoenix. Benjamin, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, welcome. How are you?
Honored to be here and honored to be with you guys. Great show so far.
Thanks. Thank you.
Want to hit a couple points. It's, in the words of Trump, this is huge, because we're looking at the Supreme Court. This is the arbiters. This is the Kennedy seat. This is the arbiter of the Constitution, which a lot of the people we're looking at on the questioning these people are almost devout communists. Anyway, looking at this, this is a bigger part, a cold civil war. It's cold as in it's not violent. Civil as in it's the direction of the country. And they're going after the Kennedy seat. So, like, this is a last-ditch effort by the left and they're losing. They don't have the facts with an extremely informed public that, with a little bit of information and a little bit of research at the tip of their fingers, they can be swayed into going, wait, I'm not with those people. They're the enemy. They've been treating me, and now their people become against them. So throughout history, when this happens, they're losing their minds. The next step is broader unrest, violence, or the way that the socialists and communists did turn the century, even into the 30s, they turned into progressives. And now it's like, what are they going to do? Because they're on the verge of losing it. And
well,
almost at
well, I mean, you ask yourself, and you're breaking up on us.
Thanks,
but, you know, we've asked ourselves the question, you know, where do they go from here? Remember after 2016, after Trump won, and again, you know, as former President Obama said, there was always a 20% chance of him winning.
After the election.
After
he
the
said
election.
That.
No, yeah. It's 100%.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
You're the smartest president that we ever had.
Yeah. Smartest guy in the room,
you
right?
You should understand that it's 100% because he won.
Yeah.
But, you know, they remember all the self-reflection that happened at that time. Eric and I went into hysterical laughter probably sometime in late November, early December of 2016, when they started, you know, getting reflective and saying, we need to just start, instead of just flying over flyover country.
Yeah, they bought some work boots and some coveralls on Amazon.
We need to buy some work boots and some coveralls, and we need to go into these towns and find out how the people are thinking. You know how they're thinking. The polls will tell you. You don't have to go there.
You don't.
I don't have to go anywhere to know what a significant portion of the middle class is thinking.
Well, even remember the reporter who worked for the Times that didn't even leave his apartment to do the stories that he said he went to. What's his name? Brian Williams? I don't think it was Brian Williams. But you know, you don't even have to. I mean, that. But it is the very basic point that how can you be doing analysis, real analysis, not the opinion. How can you be doing that in an election year if you really don't know what the sentiment is? I'm not expecting them to have the same internals that a campaign would have or that a party would have. But I would expect that they would certainly have somebody maybe inside those campaigns or parties that would see some things and say, okay, is there a real, because Obama, always a 20% chance, he said that after the election, but really, you know, it was a couple of idiots overnight that said, don't buy the hype in Pennsylvania. Watch Pennsylvania. Because there was something else going on and it was anecdotal. But if we could see that really without, and we did research, we're not going to say there were no tools, but we don't have the tools that are available that news organization like the New York Times or Washington Post or any of them have. They have rooms filled with people that can do this kind of research.
We didn't have what either party had that 2 weeks before they started seeing the turn in Pennsylvania,
right,
and Michigan and Wisconsin. And we, you know, we might have had anecdotal evidence, but we didn't have the same information that they had where they started seeing that turn. And you know, remember that as you look at the polls now. I mean, I'm very interested in what the polls are going to do now. For those people that, because we always get the people who will call, polls are never right. Actually, they are. Mm-hmm. You can find polls, as we have done, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, whether it was really 2012 and 2016, where we really started looking and saying, okay, what polls were actually correct?
Right.
And what you find out is, 2 months out, 3 months out, 4 months out, the polls aren't that accurate. Once you start getting 30 days in, mm-hmm. you start seeing that the polls start tightening, and by the time you get to a couple of days beforehand, people, for example, say that the polls for Trump were completely wrong. No, they weren't.
No.
There were polls that were dead on for the numbers. They may not have, the polls didn't figure out the electoral votes, and, you know, you and I have said, well, maybe they should start doing that. I don't know how much money it would cost them to do it.
Right.
But by the time you got to the polls are done on what the people are thinking, And so to get to those specific districts and break them down, you would probably need more votes. You would need more numbers than what your sample size is, you know, countrywide. So that might be a very tough thing to actually do to predict. But they did know the internal polls. They started knowing about 2 weeks before that there might be a shift happening in certain districts in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, the polls on the where the people voted, some of them were dead on.
Yeah,
right. I mean, just within a half a percentage point of the actual numbers. And they said, no, it showed Hillary winning. Well, I know it showed what Hillary would get in the raw vote, and that's what she did get, very close to it. And the same thing for Trump. He won the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something that they, since we've had two electoral, you know, two very close votes,
mm-hmm.
You know, in 2000 and in 2016, you know, maybe they should start looking to see if they could poll and then figure out the Electoral College, you know, that way, if there's a better
right.
way. There's a better way to do it, but
well, you saw it back in the day with Tim Russert. He would sometimes break it down and say and paint scenarios, going, "Look, if this happens here and these districts here and those districts and this precinct here and this state and all these come together, you could see the electoral votes in this state go to they." He would break those down, but you couldn't really. I don't know that there was that wasn't so much of a poll as it was really a demonstration as to where it might go. It wasn't based on sentiment. It wasn't based on respondents. It was based on basically history in any given precinct or any given district in a state. You know, they would break that down. They don't try and do that anymore. But if you watched election night of 2016, what you saw was this. I mean, it was a very smug attitude. It was almost a parade for her, Hillary Clinton. And then into the evening, the later it got after the polls closed, it just went downward. It was a downward spiral because it was reality, and they had painted a picture, and the media helped, of something that wasn't true. And they saw it as landslide without looking at, again, you know, how this might add up.
Right. But looking at the polls now, as we were, you know, doing earlier in our pre-show meeting, I see a ton of races out there. I mean, I'm looking at the Arizona race right now, the Arizona Senate race, McSally versus Sinema, Kristen Sinema, the Democratic Democrat, and Martha McSally, the Republican. And, you know, the last three polls have Sinema up 3, 7, 6, and 3. In earlier polls, earlier in the month, McSally was up by a couple. Well, right now, the latest poll was from the 16th to the 20th. Okay.
Right.
We're still not into the midst of the whole Kavanaugh thing. And Sinema was up by 3, but margin of error 4.7. Mm-hmm. So that's a dead heat.
Yeah,
and if you look at that overall, except for the one likely voter poll by CNN that was done where she was up by 7, everything else shows that really is a dead heat right there. And we don't know what the polls are going into the Kavanaugh vote. I think, and again, I think that the Kavanaugh vote has the potential to energize both, but I do believe that it may energize Republicans more, be it whether he is not confirmed or confirmed. The energy that I see right now, the motivation, the voter motivation on the right, to me, is much greater than it was 2 weeks ago. I don't know if I can necessarily say that about the left, because I think the left has been on maximum overdrive for the last year, the last 2 years, looking at this midterm.
Right.
And so the energy is there. I do think, just because how important it is when you talk about the possibility of, and again, we don't know what Kavanaugh's going to do. Kavanaugh could get on and do what Roberts did. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the possibility, and we're talking about where Roberts, you know, changed the wording.
Mm-hmm. And Obamacare.
Yeah, to actually, you know, to fit the narrative that he wanted to. Mm-hmm. People were shocked by it. But on other things, when it comes to regulations, he is a seems to be a constructionist. So all Supreme Court justices at times can be a mixed bag. But you just you never know how this is going to affect the election. It's going to be interesting to see what the polls are over the next couple of weeks. More of your calls and comments coming up. If you'd like to get in, lines open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Just bringing up a scenario here since we were looking at some of the polling.
Yeah, I thought of this earlier, but
so
go ahead.
Just hypothetically, because we're looking at some of these races out there. I mean, even if you're looking at the Menendez race in New Jersey, Senate race, and then we talked about, in Arizona, what's going on.
Right.
And how close these are. And can you imagine if the Republicans actually had some really big victories and it was like 55 to 45? So, and part of the reason is Kavanaugh isn't confirmed. The vote isn't there.
Yeah.
So it goes down to defeat. Then the election comes and they increase their lead in the Senate. It's 55 to 45, and Trump goes, "All right, let's bring up Kavanaugh again," and he gets in the second time.
Well, and there's the it, what here's what I wonder, and because I you know that's that passed through my tiny little brain earlier, and I was thinking, imagine that there is this shift in the Senate, and he comes back with Kavanaugh again, but here's another question. Because you and I looking at the polls, now we've only seen one poll in one race that's included Thursday, last Thursday. But more and more polls by the end of this week will include Thursday and the days after. Will the Democrats go quiet? We asked the question about the NFL, right? And the rule. They still have the rule, but they took the punishment away. As you call it, the don't ask, don't tell rule. Is it now going to go quiet? Are they going to bring something else up on Trump and try and just let it happen quietly and move on?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Just for a moment, we want to talk about the president and the agreement on the new trade deal yesterday. This was the president talking about it yesterday.
By the way, without tariffs, we wouldn't be talking about a deal. Just for those babies out there that keep talking about tariffs, that includes Congress. Oh, please don't charge tariffs. Without tariffs, you wouldn't be, we wouldn't be standing here.
Just want to spend a couple of moments on this. We know people want to talk about the Kavanaugh thing, but this is really a huge deal. And I do think that this is something that the president politically can use to help in the midterms when he's out there doing the rallies. You know, we got the trade agreement and everything else. Now, the specifics of the trade agreement, some good, some bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the good is we don't go to a situation where we don't have any trade deal with Canada and Mexico. That would be bad if the president decided to go in that direction. I still don't think, we won't know, and it's very tough to predict what's not going to happen, but I don't think the president would have ever gone that direction to begin with, because there would have been pushback from the Congress.
Yeah, in fact, what I think the president meant to say in that audio we just heard was the threat of tariffs, because he knows that tariffs aren't good. He's admitted it.
Yes. But the when you look at this free trade agreement, and I got an email today from a guy saying, you guys are the only two conservatives that think this deal stinks. Well, number one, we haven't really given our opinion on the deal. And as we said last night, there are some parts of it we don't like at all, including the major portion that the president has promoted. But there's some good things in there. Now, we did open up some agriculture and dairy. Now, we heard about the dairy. That was one of the big things the president promoted. But as the Wall Street Journal points out, we will only expand our market by 1% when it comes to dairy in Canada. But still, it's movement in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And if you're making that more free trade, we're all for that. And that's a good thing. One of the reasons we didn't hear about timber is because that's one of the victories that Canada got. What Canada got was the president, remember, put the tariff on soft timber in April, I believe it was. Well, that's going to be retracted, and the president just can't do it again under the new free trade agreement. That has to go through a basically an arbitration panel. A panel would have to decide whether a tariff was justified. The president used, you know, the term and talked about the babies when it comes to tariffs and is being known as the tariff babies, which I don't know why, but I love that. The
bunch of babies.
The tariff babies. And our opinion has always been based on economics. There's nothing personal here. It's all based on economics. Look, there's a couple of things that the president promoted clearly when he talked about what he wanted in a trade in a trade agreement. One of them was he wanted to get rid of the $150 billion trade deficit. This trade deal isn't going to help him accomplish that at all. You notice he didn't bring that up. This is going to reduce the trade deficit. Mm-hmm. Right. The other thing that the president said he wished to do was he wished to bring manufacturing back to the United States, right?
Yep.
That he wanted, for example, cars to be made in the United States, and he didn't want our car companies going over there. He wanted us to be making cars here in the United States and selling them overseas.
Yeah.
This trade deal makes that harder to happen. Mm-hmm. The trade deal, and the president used the tariff babies and then went right on to his big accomplishment, which was the automobiles. Well, what happened in the automobiles? There has to be more, not American, North American content in any vehicle that is sold, sold between the three countries. There has to be more North American content, not necessarily American, but North American. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not the North American Free Trade Agreement, it's the United States, Canada, and Mexico, it's still North America. Mm-hmm. There has to be more North American content, which is going to raise the cost. Then the salary requirements that he put on Mexico, that Mexico must, raise it, doesn't affect Mexico. It actually affords General Motors and Ford. Remember, the companies are talking about are all American companies. And if you noticed, none of the American automobile manufacturers are saying this is a great deal for them. They don't like the deal. The deal will make it so Ford and General Motors sells fewer cars in North America. And because you've raised the cost of automobiles in North America, more expensive to manufacture, what the president said he wanted, which was to send more vehicles to manufacture them in the United States and send them overseas, is now going to be tougher to do because you've raised the cost of manufacturing of cars in the United States, in Mexico, and in Canada. And you, the consumer, will pay for it. And that is what the president viewed as the greatest victory in this. Hmm. And so as we only got one email on it, the one guy who said, and I said, well, wait a minute. There's some parts of it we like, but the big part of it the president promoted is wrong. And I invited him to argue more than debate more than just the rhetoric of it makes America great to what does it actually do when you raise prices? But we live in a day and age, and I understand it. We live in a day and age where nobody wants to talk about when you look at the specifics of what's going on with Kavanaugh. Nobody wants to focus in and say, okay, what's the actual thing here? Everybody's off into a different tangent. The same on economics and trade. Everybody picks their own little corner and they stick with it instead of saying, okay, what is the result when you raise prices overall? And that's what the president has done in the free trade agreement and our trade negotiators have done. He has made cars more expensive to buy in Mexico, in the United States, and in Canada. We're all in it together.
Yeah.
The cost of buying a car in the United States, Canada, and Mexico will go up in price at a time, as you mentioned yesterday, Eric. You mentioned it yesterday. I don't know why I focused and said Eric.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said yesterday, and you and I have been doing some reading and analysis on this, is that car prices are going up. People can't afford to buy cars. They've run out of ways to finance them. And so what are people looking to do? They're looking to buy used vehicles.
Yes, and that's driving right. The market right now, which when there is a greater demand for that group of vehicles, the used vehicles, then the price goes up.
And so for some people out there, they believe this is none of it's personal. It's all economics. How does it work? I can't tell you how the president thinks because the president, even in this trade deal, has done some good things and done some bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the bad things is automobile. Now, it could have been a lot worse from what he was promoting before. But the fact is, it didn't affect probably 98% of the free trade between the countries, and that's a good thing. As we said would happen, we had predicted, look, there's going to be all this hype, all this hoopla, and what we're going to basically get is the same kind of deal, a little bit of nuances here or there. They get a little victory on timber. We get a little victory on dairy. The big problem with it is what the president and what the trade negotiators did on raising the cost of all cars manufactured in the United States, in Canada, and Mexico that you, the consumer, are going to have to pay. And it means we are less likely to ship cars from the United States anywhere else. And the president views that as a great victory for the United States, but doesn't explain why it's a great victory.
Right. Yeah. And I think if, look, here's where the tell will be. You'll see certain industries that the reason the automobile industry is key to the economy is because you look at the how often now people purchase vehicles, right? More and more they're holding on to their cars. So that hurts the OEMs because, well, they want the stuff off the assembly line to be sold. You make that more expensive, you start hurting an industry, you start seeing layoffs as a result of that, then also make the used cars by default more expensive. And you're going to see not just the automobile industry, but of course all the dealerships and all of the, if you look at the finance arms of those companies, they're all going to suffer as a result of that because people will choose, as they're doing now, to hold on to their car for longer periods of time. Because that's the cost of government. That's not the cost of anything else. We're not talking about, well, whether it's steel and aluminum or the parts going into the car or electronics or anything else. We're not saying that this stuff is scarce, that it's hard to come by. It's that a small group of people have decided to get together and determine how expensive it's going to be for us. That's the difference.
And we view it as a victory. And as we've said, nobody can explain to us why that's a victory. Now, as I said, the other things, when you look at the dairy, you know, again, that's moving. And in some of the agriculture stuff where we do have more free trade now because of it. And Canada was able to knock down some of the barriers. That's fine. But it's almost as if we make the victory over there and then we shoot ourselves in the foot on automobiles. Now,
right.
The other good thing is, Canada will like this, as we mentioned with the timber, that the president, in all likelihood, will be lifting the tariff they put on timber, and now that has to go to a panel to decide whether Canada is subsidizing it, not the president to make the decision on his own, which should cheapen construction in the United States because that timber will be coming over, and that was a fear of builders that housing prices were going to skyrocket and other construction from the use of wood because of the Canadian timber, and hopefully in the next year that will bring those prices down. So there's wins and there's losses across the board, but overall, if the president is stating that the threat of tariffs on Canada and the and Mexico and the steel tariffs and the aluminum tariffs made it worthwhile for this, he's going to have to show me the numbers on it.
Well, and that's again, it's the second largest purchase that people make. And if people aren't homeowners, it's the first largest purchase on vehicles. And you start seeing that slide, you start seeing the economy slide, and that will be your tell. This is what the Bush administration saw with steel tariffs. They saw companies leaving the country. And they said, this can't stand. We cannot keep this going. It can't. We cannot do this because the job loss will be, well, who knows what it would have been had they not ended those steel tariffs prematurely.
But overall, the vast majority of products unchanged.
Right.
And so, you know, if the president wishes to call it a victory, fine. We just do the analysis on the reality of economics.
Look, he's got my support. If we're going to stand strong against China, by the way, politically, you can get away with that all day long too. It is going to hurt, but if they're not going to play by the World Trade Organization rules, then not only the U.S., but all of our allies and other trade partners with China need to get in line and putting the pressure on them. That's a very real strategy, and it has to be effective, because I don't know how you can put a cost on China not playing by the rules and stealing intellectual property time and time again and getting away with it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The president, during his press conference yesterday, talking about the trade agreement. I won't say free trade agreement, because I think they specifically didn't put the F in there. But the trade agreement with Canada and Mexico, had to say this. This might have been a little bit off the topic and moving more towards the Kavanaugh thing, I believe.
Yeah. I'm not a drinker. I can honestly say I never had a beer in my life, okay?
Right.
It's one of my only good traits. I don't drink. Whenever they're looking for something good, I say, I never had a glass of alcohol. I've never had alcohol. I've just, you know, for whatever reason. Can you imagine if I had, what a mess I'd be? I'd be the world's worst.
Self-deprecating humor.
From Donald Trump.
Yeah. You know, the last time that he even came close to that was, and no one saw it because it was in the middle of the night in the U.S. I've said two things about, you know, the president and the timing of things. So when he was at the summit in Singapore, after they did the photo op with Kim Jong-un, he had his own press conference. And he said to reporters, these were global reporters, saying, look, in a year from now, I might tell you that this deal did not work out, didn't go the way I wanted, and I'll probably make up a story, you know, make up an excuse. That was self-deprecating humor. And the other point that I think that the other thing that America missed, of course, was his win and his victory speech that night of the election in 2016, because what I heard was a humble public servant speaking, and of course a lot of that wasn't replayed by the media. You really had to search for it. But when you look at, you know, the president, I think in front of the people, especially right now, we talked about his cabinet being settled in after the first year, how he started to appoint people, and we said, look, this is going to play out differently because the people who are being appointed, if they accept that, you know, if they're that nomination, then they know what they're in for, right? So he's getting the people that to put the cabinet in place and the staff in place that he really wants in his second year. I think the case could be made by recent activity or lack of activity that maybe the president is also settling in with the media, or he's been directed to tone it down a bit until after the midterms. It could be either or. But I do believe that the president has always been in the private sector, comfortable in his own shoes. That changed when he went from having zero bosses to having more than 320 million bosses in one night. And I think it had him kind of all over the place for a number of reasons. During the campaign and after the campaign, as he became president. And I think there's a case to be made as he's settling in and learning the job and is now knows what he can do and what he can't do. I think there's probably a little more thought based on recent behavior going into communication and how he interacts with media. Because here's the thing, he's winning. On the Kavanaugh nomination, they wanted an FBI background check. He gave it to him. Then expanded the whole thing on Monday. He's winning. When you look at the things that he's put out there, aside from some gaffes communication-wise, the president is winning. The left is screaming because they think that they're winning. They know he's winning. They know he's resonating in the media especially. That's why they call it the resistance in the first place.
If you want to get in, lines are open, 866-90-RUDD. I will get to more of your calls and comments on the Kavanaugh investigation, FBI investigation, and what Mitch McConnell may do. And will there be a vote this weekend? That more all on the way.
For Video Road Log, here's your forecast.
Continued rains from what was Hurricane Rosa will affect Southern California, portions of southwestern Arizona, and the central Rockies through at least tomorrow. As much as 3 to 6 inches, isolated amounts of 10 inches of rain for areas right up through the central Rockies. You can expect some heavy rain again today along areas of I-10 in Arizona, sections of I-40 south of the Grand Canyon, and I-15 as you head from California through Vegas into Utah. The severe weather and heavy showers yesterday in the upper Midwest is moving off to the east. We saw those heavy showers in Iowa, portions of Wisconsin, northern Illinois, and Michigan. Today, that system slowly moves to the north and east. We'll see rain for I-81 all the way over to I-75. And then on I-80 east and west, we'll see those showers rather heavy today. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
For those not on Ambien, there's Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I guess you could take that one of two ways. Let's head to your calls and comments about the what's going on this week. Is anything going on? Anything
no,
happening?
Not much.
Let's go to Irvin in Chicago. Irvin, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing today?
Very good. You're on the radio.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I want to talk about how can the Republicans cry now when they created all the problems that they're going through right now?
How?
If they talk about moving the field goal post, they took the field goal post off the field where we couldn't even kick the field goal.
They specifically how? Explain how. What are you talking about?
Okay, if they would have let Obama appointed Garland at least get a hearing, we might not even be in a situation where Kavanaugh can have a seat.
Okay, let's break this down then. Let's break it down. Okay, what you're saying is the Republicans put themselves in this particular situation. Okay, let's say that they did. All right, because Merrick Garland was not, you know, given a chance. We understand. Let me speak. Let me respond to you.
Okay.
What you are stating then is that in a republic, the representatives that get elected and the party that gets more representatives elected by the people, they get to make the rules and regulations of that particular body. You're stating since the Republicans won and could control that body, which means control that nomination, because in a republic, it is the majority representatives of that party that get to make the decisions, that since they make a decision that you disagree with, it's okay to defame somebody's reputation.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is this. First of all, that's a lifetime position. So they get to go over your whole life. When you in your mom's womb, if you did something wrong at that point and someone witnessed it, that's part of your life. We go over your whole life, not just part of your life.
Well, Irvin, look, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your call, because you now have you. Thank you so much for calling us up to now saying it goes into the womb.
Mm-hmm.
So now, according to a Democrat, it's not a woman's body anymore.
Right.
What a nutcase. Sorry. I don't mean to.
Well, we
hey, we're idiots,
go back,
but you're a nutcase.
We should go back to daycare.
Well, no, it goes back to what we originally said.
Mm-hmm.
The if you're in power, you get to make the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, keep in mind that that position was nothing new. On the Senate floor back in the day, the Democrats held the same position because it was just as much out of respect for Hillary Clinton as it was for Donald Trump. Remember, that scenario was that the new president should pick the nominee.
Right. And I don't.
There was not a given at that point that Trump was going to win.
Well, no, but the point is, this is like dealing with the woman that was on CNN last week. The guy makes a statement. We say, well, this is what you're saying. And it's exactly what he said. And then he goes, no, that's not what I'm saying. Well, of course, that's what you're saying. Because why? Harry Reid decided to change the rules of the Senate when he was the head of the Senate, when it came to federal nominations. Therefore, when he did that, you had Mitch McConnell come in and say, okay, you change those rules. We're going to change these rules for the Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
The people in power, we get to change. These aren't laws. We're not changing laws. We're simply changing rules of the Senate that we have the ability to do constitutionally. You may not like it, but, hey, win elections. That's what Harry Reid said.
Right.
And Mitch McConnell came in and said the exact same thing. That's the reality of it. And what you're saying then is it's okay to defame somebody's character because that's the reality of how a democratic republic, constitutional republic works. And then you got into the point of we now have to go back into the womb when you have a lifetime position.
Uh-huh.
So that anybody agree with them that we need to go back to the womb now?
Mm.
All Supreme Court justices, we need to go back to the womb.
Well, at least
did you? How often did you kick your mother? That's domestic abuse.
Yes.
I'm sorry. That was a little nutty to our last caller.
Yeah, just a little.
Just a little nutty. A
little over the top.
And you wonder why.
Yeah.
Kavanaugh was kicking in his mother's womb. Domestic assault.
Yeah. Yeah, why not just, we'll go back to daycare. He threw ice on someone in a bar. We do need to say that. The kids were in a bar. But this is the desperate attempt by the left when they know they're losing. Even if Kavanaugh, don't get the confirmation votes for Kavanaugh.
What did he do when the egg split?
Yeah. Well, it's, Newsweek now pointing out that he lied about having no connections to Yale when they can show his grandfather attended Yale, which would make him in turn
a legacy
student. And in 2011, these prestigious universities, including Yale, Harvard, Princeton, said that roughly 25% of their new admissions could be considered legacy students. This is reaching.
Yeah.
This is reaching. you may have had too much to drink, and you need to go home.
Well, I'm telling you, he may have drank in high school and college.
I don't know how much you have to drink or smoke to get to this point.
But I swear, everybody else is tripping right now.
No, you're seriously dropping something. I don't know what it is. But I would not drive or operate heavy machinery anywhere in the near future. Let's say nothing before a year's end.
Oh,
please Uber home. Wow.
I can't believe we actually got the call.
Yeah.
We need to go back to the womb.
Yeah. Right.
What was he like?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Can I retire now? I want to go out on a high note. I want to say the last call I ever had.
Well, actually, I saw the meme over the weekend. It may have been last week. When Kavanaugh was born, he did what many male babies do on female nurses.
He was naked in front of three nurses
yes.
when he was born.
Yes.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, well, and if you've ever been in that room and witnessed that, when a male is born, also what they do almost first before they cry. Let's just say there's a reason they wear those gloves and masks.
Well, so we're going to go back to that story about the college professor then?
Yeah, right.
The Georgetown professor who says white Republicans should be castrated and fed to swine.
And fed to swine?
Yes. A professor at Georgetown University known for making incendiary comments. That's a Sherlock comment. Again, supporters of President Donald Trump said white Republican men deserve miserable deaths for supporting Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. See Christine Fair, an associate professor at Georgetown in the School of Foreign Service, tweeted Saturday saying white Republican men should die, and an added bonus would be if women castrate their corpses and feed them to swine, end of quote.
Okay. Well, that went south quickly. We can't have a debate. You can't have a debate. That's the whole point. You can't. And this is what I said earlier, this is further proof of it. There's no coming back from the brink in terms of the far left in America today. There's none.
Well, you said, will they come off the brink? She's over it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. She previously made
offensive comments on social media telling a Muslim Trump supporter to go F off and go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Georgetown University said Fair's views are her own and not the views of the university.
Yeah, right.
In a statement to the Daily Caller.
Yeah. In other words, we don't want this to affect student enrollment.
We believe she might have crossed the line there.
Yeah, I have a line in my mind, and I know just about where it is.
By the way, the last thing that we ever want to do, this is why when we talk about free speech and they want to shut us up and we don't want to shut them up, that's why we don't want to shut them up.
Yeah.
We never want to stop that Georgetown professor from letting people know exactly what she thinks.
And
that's why free speech is beautiful, because she doesn't hide it. You know who she is and what she has said and what she thinks.
And I don't think Georgetown can make their own decision on whether she remains or not. That's up to them. We're not calling for anything. We know what populates the halls of these universities. We know who these individuals are. Please keep it up. At least through November of 2020.
Now, I would put in, the Daily Caller, was this in the Daily Caller?
Hmm.
Daily Caller? Yeah, the Daily Caller wrote, had this story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did the Daily Caller contact PETA to find out if feeding humans to swine is human parts to swine is something.
No, I think that's.
We need to talk. You know, anybody call PETA on this one?
Because I'm.
Is the left upset?
I'm part of PETH, People for the Ethical Treatment of Humans. Now, I'm not upset. I'm actually kind of happy. It works. Politically, it works. Keep it up.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara asking the question, should future Supreme Court nominees be judged all the way back to the womb, as the last caller suggested, the last Democratic caller?
Yeah.
Let us head to you. We go to Jack in Ithaca, New York. Just kidding. We're not really asking that question. We may have to someday, though. Jack, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I wonder if some 15-year-old tonight posted something on Twitter or Instagram that'll keep them from becoming a judge 45 years from now. But my point is that I think Senator Flake may have actually helped the Republican Party by calling for this investigation. If you're a senator in a purple, shall we say, state, or a state where your reelection is a tough one, you now can say, hey, look, I was kind of leaning towards not voting for the man, or I was leaning towards voting for him. I wasn't sure. I sat through the hearings, and like so many Americans, I couldn't make up my mind. But we called in the FBI. They did a full investigation. And any reasonable person would say that there's no real conclusion after that investigation, I'm going to vote for him. So I think this investigation gives some cover to Republicans who may have been afraid to alienate some of their female voters, and gives them a little political cover to vote yes.
Well, this only works if the polls since Thursday, which will start rolling in over the next couple of days, that by the end of the week, those polls show that the American people are not with them, that more importantly, those senators in those states, especially where it's close, are not getting the support of their voters in their states. And ultimately, it only works if the vote is to confirm Kavanaugh, because it doesn't work for the Republicans if he does not get confirmed. It becomes still a very, very much so an uphill battle. Even in November, even though I do believe that this, whether he's confirmed or not, will work for them politically, I don't know to what effect in November at the midterm.
And I think the Democrats' plan is it doesn't really matter what happens with Ford anymore. It's let's get at whatever other allegations that we have to try to delay it. That's what they really want.
Yeah, they want further delay. They're going to want Ramirez to have a hearing, or you know, there will be a call somewhere along the way when they know the vote is inevitable. And the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, saying on Monday that there will be a vote this week. And so we don't know when that's going to be. I'm assuming Saturday there could be a vote on the floor, but we don't know. He said the time for delays
is over. I haven't heard Sunday
of vote. Yeah, so they could do that Sunday and get Kavanaugh seated on by Monday morning. He would only miss a week of SCOTUS material and could easily get caught up. We'll see if that happens, though.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.